Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable David Gilbertson presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before it. As Chief Justice Gilbertson is participating by telephone, he has designated the Honorable John K. Coppenham as presiding justice in the courtroom.
Good morning. This is the case of Patrick Culhane and Nancy Turbach versus Western National Mutual Insurance Company. I should indicate that Chief Justice Gilbertson will be participating in this morning's argument on the telephone, and he will be able to ask questions during the argument. Justice Sabers has disqualified himself from this case, and former Chief Justice Robert A. Miller has been appointed to sit in his place. All right. Mr. Moore, you're appearing for the appellant, and we'll proceed first, and then Mr. Aberest, you're representing the appellees. Is that correct? All right. Mr. Moore, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I'm James Moore on behalf of Western National Mutual Insurance Company. The issue in this case is whether, under a policy of insurance limiting the insurer's liability to the amount necessary to repair or replace property with other property of like kind and quality, an insured is entitled to recover for diminished value after repair when the vehicle has been restored by repairs to its previous physical appearance and function. And there's no dispute in this case about the adequacy of the repairs to restore the vehicle at issue to its previous appearance and function.
Is there any dispute?
Mr. Moore, is there any question of fact anywhere in the record?
Ultimately, Your Honor, there would be a question of fact whether, in fact, there was diminished value in this case. That question is not developed in the record and is not material to the court's determination of the legal question whether the policy of insurance in this case provides coverage for diminished value. I think that's a legal question as a matter of law, and so no, I don't think there is any factual issue in the record.
Thank you.
What did Judge Erickson mean when, in his opinion, when he said some of these facts have to go to the jury?
Well, Your Honor, that's unclear to me, and I think that there's some confusion whether the circuit court's opinion simply transferred what is properly a legal question for the court to resolve, that is, the interpretation and construction of the insurance policy, to the jury, or whether the court simply meant that as a matter of law, the court decided that the policy covers diminished value and that it's for the jury to determine whether, as a matter of fact, there is diminished value in this case. The striking thing about the opinion to me is that the very first sentence of the analysis in Judge Erickson's opinion says, the issue of whether plaintiffs are entitled to any post-repair diminution of value they can prove is one that should be decided by a jury. Well, I disagree with that. I think under clearly established principles in South Dakota, as in just about every other jurisdiction, that is a question of law for the court to determine in the first instance. And I don't think there are any material issues of fact about that. It's simply a straightforward question dependent upon, in this case, the meaning of the word repair as used in the policy. And then I think you have to factor in, because there's a dispute in this case, whether this court's decisions in Stucker and in Grubbs have already decided the question in South Dakota. That's in dispute.
Mr. Moore, for purposes of this argument, does your client have to concede that the repaired vehicle is worth less than it was prior to the accident on the market if they were trying to sell it?
Well, for purposes of the argument, Your Honor, the issue is whether diminished value is covered under the policy, assuming that there's diminished value. I guess for purposes of the argument, I can concede that without conceding that there is any diminished value. That's not developed in the record, and it was something that would have to be ascertained at trial.
Well, if there was a question of fact and diminished value, then that would have to be sent back, correct?
Well, assuming that there's coverage for diminished value, if the court determines that under the plain meaning of the policy, that repair and replace means to restore the vehicle to its previous physical condition and does not require, as a matter of law, compensation for diminished value after repair, there is no factual issue that would ever need to be resolved.
Yeah, thank you.
The
is it possible that Judge Erickson was thinking of doing the same thing that happened in Grubbs and Stucker, perhaps that there is an issue about whether it's restorable to its former condition?
I don't think so, Your Honor, for this reason. Neither Stucker nor Grubbs addressed the issue that's precisely before the court in this case. Neither Stucker nor Grubbs mentions the term diminished value. Neither Stucker nor Grubbs involved an instruction on diminished value, and I think that's very important. The jury in both of those cases was instructed that they could award either the actual value of the vehicle or the cost of repair in the alternative. They were not instructed that they could award the cost of repair plus diminished value after the vehicle had been repaired, which is exactly the remedy that is sought in this case. And the construction that I think Judge Erickson afforded the policy is that that's proper and appropriate under the language of this policy. Under Stucker and Grubbs, the neither decision stated the issue in terms of the meaning of the language repair or replace with other property of like kind and quality, which is the policy language that is at issue in this case. And so I think you look at those two decisions and say, what is the issue in those cases? Did they address the policy language at issue in this case? Did they deal with diminished value as it has been construed by 27 or 28 courts within the last 5 years around the country in very clear and precise terms? And I think the answer to those questions is no. And I think you see that reflected in the Division of Insurance's own wrestling with the Grubbs decision. It has, after all, taken two positions in its bulletins with respect to Grubbs. First, that Grubbs required an insurer to pay diminished value in a first-party context, and then more recently, in a bulletin issued just after the lawsuit was started in this case, taking the position that Grubbs deals with a situation where a vehicle can't be restored substantively, physically, to its previous physical condition and doesn't require payment for diminished value in a first-party context. The striking thing about the Stucker opinion, I think, is that the dispute in that case is whether the property could be repaired. Clearly, that was an issue in that case, and the plaintiff contended that the property could not be repaired. The issue on appeal was whether the evidence supported the verdict, because the verdict was for more than the cost of repair. It doesn't mean that the jury awarded diminished value in addition to the cost of repair. In fact, the jury was not instructed that it could do that. The jury was instructed that it could award the actual value or the cost of repair. Because they awarded more than the cost of repair, and because juries are presumed to follow instructions, they must have awarded what they determined to be the actual value of the vehicle. That is not the issue that is before this court today in this case, and it simply wasn't addressed in Stucker. I think the same is true in the Grubbs decision. The jury, again, was not instructed that it could award the measure of damages that is being sought in this case. And so once you take those two cases out of the equation and say that they don't address the issue before this case, which is whether the policy language, repair or replace with other property of like kind and quality, means that an insurer has to pay for the intangible element of diminished value after repair, you look to the cases that have addressed that issue around the country over the course of the last 5 years. And the principles underlying those cases, which I think are perfectly consistent with established principles of South Dakota law. The clear trend since 1999 has been for the courts to reject claims of diminished value under the same or substantially similar policy language as is contained in Western National's policy, which is in ISO form, approved by the South Dakota Division of Insurance. Since 1999, by my calculation, there have been diminished value decisions in 14 states. Of the 29 reported decisions, 26 have found no recovery for diminished value. That has been the result in the Supreme Courts in the states of Delaware, Maine, Florida, Texas, South Carolina, and Massachusetts. And I think that more persuasive than the fact that there is a majority rule in those cases is the rationale employed by the cases, which is fairly simple and direct, and that is, does the plain and ordinary meaning of the word repair connote value? And the answer that the courts have uniformly given to that question is no. And what's striking to me in the context of this appeal is that the appellee's brief makes no argument and cites no cases that the plain and ordinary meaning of the word repair requires Western National to pay for diminished value. The plain and ordinary meaning of the word repair is to fix something in a physical sense, to remedy it, to restore it to its physical condition, to replace parts, to fix dents, to repaint an automobile. In the context of an auto liability policy, that's what repair means. And this court essentially held as much in the Grubbs case. In Grubbs, this court held that the definition of repair and replace mean the restoration of the insured properties to substantially the same condition in which it was immediately prior to the damage. And in the context of whether there's any dispute or ambiguity in the policy, because...
Can restoration be taken to mean monetary restoration?
I don't think so, Your Honor. The language of the policy says, the language of the case says substantially the same condition in which it was immediately prior to the damage. And if you look at language from the Stucker case talking about the limitation on repair found in the policy at issue in that case, it says that the provision has no application in case the insured vehicle is damaged beyond repair and cannot thereby be restored to its former condition. You look at the conjunctive and, which means cannot thereby be restored to its former condition, really is the same thing as damaged beyond repair. Damaged beyond repair means that you can't fix it. And if there were any ambiguity about the meaning of the word repair, certainly that should have been at issue in the Grubbs case, in which the court simply stated as a simple proposition that repair means to restore to its previous condition. And that has been the decision of the majority of appellate decisions and other decisions addressing the diminished value cases during the course of the last 5 years.
If you, let me ask you one thing about that, though. If you had two Audis that are involved in this case, they're identical in every respect, except one has been in an accident, one has not, and they're sitting there on a lot to be sold, can you honestly say that they're both of like kind and quality?
Your Honor, I think that the way that the other appellate decisions addressing that issue have confronted it is to say whether like kind and quality modifies the word repair or modifies the word replace. It means that if you're going to put new parts on a vehicle, they have to be of like kind and quality to the parts that were on the vehicle at the time. If you're going to replace the vehicle, it means that you have to replace it with a vehicle of like kind and quality. If you're going to, under the payment of loss provision, pay in cash, I don't think that it means that you have to restore the vehicle to its previous value, because that would be contrary to the plain and ordinary meaning of the word repair. And the cases have not found that the language like kind and quality is in any way ambiguous itself. If you look specifically at the decisions from the Texas Supreme Court in the Schaefer decision, from the Delaware Supreme Court in O'Brien, and from the Florida Supreme Court in Siegel, all of them deal with policy language addressing repair or replace with other property of like kind and quality, and none of them found any ambiguity in the phrase like kind or quality or any reference that created a situation where the ordinary meaning of repair suddenly connotes an instance of, or an understanding of value. The principles underlying the cases finding no coverage for diminished value in other jurisdictions, in addition to the plain and ordinary meaning of the word repair, the courts have looked to the requirement that the policy be read as a whole and that all of its provisions be given meaning. And what the courts have reasoned is that if the policy requires payment for diminished value, it essentially negates the insurer's option to elect to pay either the actual value of the vehicle or the cost of repair. If you are paying the cost of repair plus the vehicle's diminished value, it's hard to understand logically how you are not insuring the value of the vehicle in every case. And that's the basis under which the courts have said that reading the policy that way makes that provision meaningless. And because as a principle of contract construction, we read the policy as a whole and attempt to give meaning to all of its provisions, we won't read it in that way. Against those decisions is the analysis of the circuit court. And I don't think that there's anything persuasive in the circuit court's decision that would require this court to take a different path than has been taken in the decisions simply addressing the plain and ordinary meaning of the word repair. And some of the decisions don't go any farther than that. You can look at the Hall decision from the Maine Supreme Court, in which that is the court's analysis, and it basically ends there. But the circuit court's analysis here, I think, relied on the doctrine of reasonable expectations, which is clearly not the law in the state of South Dakota. It cited the Stucker case, which I think has no application, given that the measure of damages on which the jury was instructed in that case is not the measure of damages that the plaintiffs were seeking in this case. And it suggested that there's some mutuality of obligation under the contract of insurance when, in fact, all Western National is asking the court to do is enforce the policy as written. And there is certainly nothing unfair or inequitable about enforcing and applying an insurance contract as it is written. I want to move just briefly to the question of bad faith in this case before my initial time expires. The circuit court's analysis was essentially that bad faith is a question of fact. And in a lot of instances, that's true. I don't think it's true in this case. It's not true in all cases. And the fact that it's not true in all cases is illustrated by this court's decision in the Fenn case from a few years ago. And I have a hard time reading the Fenn decision and then looking at the facts of this case and trying to argue that any different conclusion can be reached in this case other than that there was no bad faith as a matter of law. The facts are very straightforward. Western National got a repair estimate for the Audi that had been damaged here. It paid that repair estimate within 1 week of its reception. It got a request from counsel that in addition, I shouldn't say from counsel, from Nancy Turback, that in addition to the repair estimate, it needed to pay diminution in value. And that was not Western National's practice in South Dakota. And so Western National retained counsel in this case and said, do we have to pay diminished value in South Dakota? Our insured is telling us that we do. Is that required under South Dakota law? And Mr. Dibert said, no, it's not. I don't think it is, and I don't think you have to pay that in this case. When the lawsuit was started, Western National went back to Mr. Dibert and asked again. That discussion between counsel and Western National occurred in the context of the majority rule throughout the country that diminished value is not covered under the policy language that's at issue in this case. And so how do you get to bad faith? How do you establish the absence of a reasonable basis for Western National's position? And this court was clear in Fenn that assertion of a legitimate policy defense is not bad faith. In fact, In the Fenn case, the issue was whether this court's decision in Westfall still applied to control the outcome of that case. And although the Westfall decision was some 20 years old, The court's opinion says this court has consistently noted that the Westfall holding remains sound. And in the context of that, the court said that Westfall is controlling and that the insurer in the Fenn case had asserted an illegitimate defense based on the policy under South Dakota law, and that it had to pay the policy benefits, and it still said as a matter of law there's no bad faith in this case. I think the question that you should ask yourself, assuming that you reach the bad faith issue in this case, is that what could Western National have done other than pay the diminished value claim and not have been sued for bad faith under the argument that's being made that there's a bad faith question here that needs to be submitted to the jury? Certainly the circuit court's opinion doesn't answer that question, and I don't think that there is a satisfactory answer to that question. In my view, Western National did everything that it could have done to assert a defense that it thought was consistent with South Dakota law, and that it was told was consistent with South Dakota law, and that in fact is consistent with a majority decision throughout the country, and it is still facing a claim for bad faith. Of course, I think it's clear under South Dakota law that if the court construes the policy to say that diminished value is not covered, there's no breach of contract, and absent breach of contract, I don't think that there's any claim for bad faith, and the court can resolve that issue on that basis. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Mr. Aberesk.
Thank you. Good morning. The whole issue here, if you look at the Biegelmeyer decision in Grubbs, and if you look at Judge Hansen's decision in Stucker, really the whole issue here comes down to a simple thing, and that is whether the word repair, as it's used in an auto policy, can be allowed to be construed to leave the policyholder $10,000 short. To leave the policyholder with a $10,000 shortfall, and that's what we have here.
Mr. Aberesk, is there any legal doctrine which you rely on that would preclude the insurance company from writing a policy where they merely have to pay for repair?
No, and that's a good point. A lot of what we're arguing about here, I want to make this clear, we're not saying insurance companies cannot come in and exclude this. They certainly can. And that's why these arguments about all the rates are going to go through the roof and things like that are facetious. They can write the policy. All they have to do is add this clause in or make it clear. And if they made it clear, there wouldn't be decisions all over the country fighting over the interpretation of this language. So that's a very good point. But does the word repair allow the insurance company to leave the policyholder $10,000 short? And if that's the case, is it really a repair? Now, Justice Biegelmeyer and Grubb said no, that's not a repair. Under the meaning of the word repair, under Couch on insurance, under Blashfield on automobile law and insurance, the meaning of the word repair has evolved in that context in order to mean it must be returned to its pre-loss condition. And then in both Grubbs and Stucker, after making that statement, they go into an analysis of one thing, the difference in value before the accident as opposed to the value after the so-called repairs. Now in Grubbs, they've argued that the trailer house was a total loss. They've argued that in Stucker, the property was a total loss. If you look at the decisions, I mean, really, when do you ever have a real total loss? That's a misnomer. It's a colloquialism that we use, meaning that the property cannot be restored in a meaningful way to what the policyholder had before the accident. I mean, you can have a pile of rubble, but it's still worth something. And in Grubbs, if you want to look at the decision, they specifically say, after the repairs, the property was worth less. They didn't say it couldn't be repaired. Now,
well, wait a minute, though. You know, there is language in Grubbs that says, and it appears to me it's the basis of the court's decision. It says, we have not overlooked the conflicting evidence on the witnesses' opinions. Apparently, one indicated that a repaired trailer did not be in as good a shape as before. And then there was other evidence that the metal was available for the repair. That deck of metal was not available. So isn't it fair to say that that case really involved the question of whether or not it was repairable? And the language of the court was, in as good shape as before?
Well, I think that's right, in as good a shape as before. But a major part of their discussion in reaching that conclusion was the difference in value. They did make the comments, of course, that you refer to. In as good a shape as before. Well, and you can drive by the Gregory Airport. That trailer's still sitting there, and the Grubbs family's still living in it. And I represented George Grubbs in 1994 on a claim involving that trailer. The trailer was not a, quote, total loss.
Does the use of the word condition versus value of the property in those cases make a difference? The repair is defined as restoring it to its substantially same condition as opposed to substantially same value.
You're right.
Is that a difference that's worth, or maybe you could...
In the context, if you look at that statement in Grubbs, the words repair and replace used in a policy of insurance mean the restoration of the insured property to substantially the same condition. Then the next thing they do is go into an analysis of the value immediately. That's the whole pivotal issue. Has the value been restored? You know, we talk about these decisions in other jurisdictions and so on. What I'd like to do, if we don't get anything else done today, I'd like to just go through the policy language.
Yeah, I would too, and I'd like to ask you one thing about this before you start.
I'm sorry, about what?
I'd like to do the same, and I'd like to ask you something about the last provision. There's really three sections of the policy, I think, that are at issue here. There's the loss provision, there's a limit of liability provision, and there's a payment of loss provision. And do you have the payment of loss provision in front of you there? Do you have the payment of loss provision in front of you?
I think I do, but I'm not sure.
What bothers me about this case, even if you get through the loss, what they cover section, and get through the limit of liability section, you still get down to the third section, which is payment of loss. And there it says we pay for loss in money or replace the damage or stolen property.
Okay.
Now, how do we give effect to that language under your view of how this case should be decided?
Are you saying how would I give effect to that?
Well, it pretty clearly says money.
Yes.
Or replace the damage or stolen property.
Right. What I'd like to do, and I want to address that, what I'd like to do is I have taken the clauses that I think are the operative clauses, put them on one piece of paper verbatim. And I apologize, I have copies of this. I'd like to hand these to the clerk and have you look at them, because just so we can juxtapose the language. What?
Before you do that, though, you don't have the payment of loss section.
Anymore. Yeah, and I have the policy language right here. Are you talking about under the coverage for under the collision coverage?
I believe so, but I could stand to be corrected if I'm wrong.
Because I'm just not finding the payment of loss under the collision coverage. But that is full copy
of the policy. Just a minute, do you have a
I did.
Paragraph?
number on it?
I did if Justice Byron...
I see that, but I'm not sure what you're talking about.
I didn't bring it all in.
I have a full copy of the policy, but... payment of loss, I have it. And I apologize. That's immediately following the language that I've given to you. We must pay for loss in money or replace the damaged or stolen property.
Yeah, and that's the section, I think, when you analyze this, I think you need to include all three.
Okay. Now, I mean, that language repeats the language, or at least uses the same language that we're seeing in what I've given you as well. But can we walk down through this language? First of all, if you walk through this, now rather than taking out, just grabbing this word repair and snatching it out of context and getting it over here away from the rest of the language, I mean, the first fundamental rule of policy construction is to read the policy as a whole. If there's doubts about certain language, look through the rest of the language to see if those words are used again and in what context and how they're used so that you can apply a consistent meaning. If you look at these clauses, what you see is one consistent thread. Put the policyholder back to where they started from, at square one. Not any better, but not any worse. Now, first of all, the insuring agreement. We will pay for direct and accidental loss to your covered auto. That puts the policyholder where they started from. The next clause, the limit of liability. Our limit of liability will be, and it gives us a menu of options. The first option, actual cash value, to pay actual cash value, that puts the policyholder back where they started from, in economic terms, clearly. The second option it contains a split, two sub-options. The first one is amount necessary to repair. But rather than getting in and arguing now about what that word means, let's move on through the rest of the language so that we can come back and focus on that in context. The amount necessary to replace the property with other property of like kind and quality. That puts the policyholder right back where they started from, in economic terms. I mean, like, kind, and quality, let's, to be fair about it, can mean nothing else than a fair value equivalent. I mean, a cube of zirconium looks like a diamond. It functions just like a diamond. To the untrained eye, it's no different, but you couldn't possibly say it's of like, kind, and quality with a diamond. Nor could you say two cars sitting on a car lot are of like, kind, and quality if one's $10,000 less in value. It's just not reasonable. Now they say like, kind, and quality. Those words do not apply to this word replace. They do. Read to the next clause. Very clearly, if a repair or replacement results in better than like, kind, and quality, we will not pay for the amount of the betterment. Now there, very clearly, the words like, kind, and quality nail that word repair right on the head. Then it becomes even clearer in the next clause that the words like, kind, and quality mean value, because that betterment clause was then amended, and the wording about like, kind, and quality was exchanged for fair market value. So not only do like, kind, and quality apply directly to repair, but like, kind, and quality is synonymous with fair market value. And they give the formula. They say Betterment means the difference between fair market value of the vehicle before the loss and fair market vehicle of the vehicle after repair or replacement. Now, when you look at these, this wording like that, now go back to the word repair. If their interpretation is correct, then we have one single option on the menu here that leads to the result that the policyholder's not left where they started from. One single word, repair. And that's what they want to snatch out and read away from the rest of this. And that's why Justice Biegelmeyer and Hansen said the word repair, as used in a policy of insurance, means to restore the property to substantially the same condition. And if it doesn't satisfy that, it's not a repair. Not under the meaning of the word as it's used in this context. It's a repair in word only, in name only. Now, believe me, this business about restoring it to its functional and cosmetic condition. There's nothing cosmetic, nothing merely cosmetic about that big ugly damage disclosure on a title. And when you return, when you drive that car back on the lot and try to trade it as she did, you're going to find out it doesn't function as well in a trade either. And these are practical realities. And another thing, most South Dakotans have got car loans. Lenders uniformly require insurance, full coverage, collision insurance. If their interpretation is right, then the expectations of the public and the lenders is meaningless that you've got full coverage, because you can go upside down on your car loan just as fast as what happened here. If you've got a $10,000 loss in value, suddenly your lender's not secured anymore. This is part of the intent of the insurance. It's part of the expectation, and I know that reasonable expectations is not a doctrine that's recognized in South Dakota. But when you read the policy language, the meaning afforded to it by reasonable people is what we expect in South Dakota. That's not the reasonable expectations doctrine, it's just the question of can you reasonably interpret this language this way? And lenders and borrowers do think that they're getting coverage. So if you follow their interpretation, there's one word in this whole deal that leads to the result that the policyholder doesn't get back to where they started from. And that's the word repair. And in order to reach that, you've got to ignore the rest of the language. You've got to ignore what the court said in Grubbs and Stucker.
Mr. Harrisk, of the multitude of other jurisdictions that have looked at this, which cases would you most like us to focus on?
I have a list of those in the brief, Your Honor.
That hasn't changed then from what's in the brief?
No, it hasn't changed. And, you know, I want to say this about this split in the jurisdictions and split of opinions. First of all, we can slice and dice those things endlessly. Some of them don't contain the language we've got here. Some of them contain language that we don't have here. But when it comes down to it, the fact that there's so many different varying interpretations, not so many different, but so many courts have reached different interpretations, leads to one inescapable conclusion. Not that the law can be interpreted differently, but what these courts are saying is, we read this language and we're seeing different things. That's the definition of ambiguity. And when that happens, the policyholder should get the favor, should be favored with the interpretation that most benefits the policyholder. And the fact that you've got different courts reaching different conclusions, the only way that you can say that it's not ambiguous is to say that the Georgia Supreme Court and some of these people, Justice Biegelmeyer and Grubbs, they're not reasonable people. and they are reasonable people. You might not see, not everybody can see the same interpretation as the next person, but those are reasonable interpretations. This isn't a majority, this is not some majority rule question where we've got more court cases than you do since 1999. And by the way, you know, they cut that off at 1999 so that they don't have to go back further because it's more beneficial that way. But I don't see an expiration date on the Grubbs decision.
Doesn't your argument here that these are reasonable interpretations and that it's ambiguous go against your argument for punitive damages?
No, because...
Or bad faith?
No, I don't think so, because in Sawyer versus Farm Bureau, this court held that interpreting ambiguous policy language by the insurance company to their own benefit can be evidence of bad faith. But I think in South Dakota, and saying that this is ambiguous is really giving them the best interpretation. Because in South Dakota, we've long had a definition of the word repair.
Mr. Aversky, you're almost out of time, and I can't let you leave without addressing one other phrase in the contract that you did not discuss when we went through it word by word. How do we give effect to the language lesser of? The lesser of, you know, it's lesser of value or repair. How do we give effect to that language?
Certainly they're entitled to the lesser of. But the word repair has a meaning, as we've talked about here, as the Grubbs Court said, and that's the meaning you have to subscribe to it. And then you can apply the lesser of. And certainly they're entitled to the most optimal method of restoring the policyholder to the place that the policyholder started from. In many instances, for instance, maybe they know where they can get a like kind and quality vehicle for less money than what it'll cost to repair it. Or any number of scenarios, they're entitled to that benefit. We're using this word diminished value. The Grubbs Court didn't use diminished value. They just said difference in fair market value. Applying diminished value really is another formula that leads us to the same place that the Grubbs Court.
Have you finished your answer to Justice Sinner?
Okay.
I see your time has expired. Okay. I let you go on a little bit because we did kind of keep you tied up in the file, so. But your time has expired.
If I could conclude just this comment.
Yes, you may.
Thank you. You can use different terminology. You can use diminished value, or you can say a repair is not a repair if it leaves the policyholder thousands of dollars short. It leads you to the same place. Different wording, same place. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Abrams. Mr. Moore?
Mr. Moore, I have a question. It's kind of haunting. It's kind of twofold. You concede, do you not, that if a car has significant damage and has to be repaired, that the resale value, because of the notations on the title, and the resultant loan value has diminished, right?
Not in every case, Your Honor.
Oh.
I think there are, in fact, some of the reported decisions provide examples where a vehicle may actually be increased in value
because of the
repairs.
That's covering better. But can you, in the typical routine case, you have a car that has $5,000 worth of damage to it. When you go to buy it, the value, it has to show on the title, right?
Yes.
Well, you don't have to agree with me because I know that's a fact.
Yes.
And the loan value would, in many cases, if not all cases, increase. My question is this. You have an owner of a unique vehicle or an expensive vehicle that wants, they buy it for a reason. And assuming your interpretation of the insurance contract is correct, what is their recourse? Are there other types of riders, or do they just fly blind? Do you see where I'm coming from?
If your question is whether they're able to negotiate a different contract with their insurer, I don't know the extent to which insurance companies market policies that explicitly provide coverage for diminished value for an additional premium.
And I'm sure there are for historical cars and whatever, but the typical buyer, they really have no other recourse than rely on the standard language of the insurance policy. Fair statement?
But I think that's the point, Your Honor, and that was going to be the first thing that I was going to say.
Gave you something to lead off with.
When we got here, when I came back up, is that an insurance policy is a contract. And what we're dealing with is the meaning of the words in the insurance contract and defining the contract and applying it as it exists between the parties. What Mr. Abresk is talking about in terms of making an insured whole is a tort concept. And it might be relevant to a tort measure of damages, but it's not what we're talking about in terms of a contract. What we're talking about with a contract, and this court has held many times that an insurance policy is a contract. What we're talking about is applying the contract as it was negotiated and entered into by the parties. If Mr. Abresk's analysis of the policy held water in this case, that the insured had to be made whole, then diminished value, post-repair diminished value could not be excluded, even if the insurer put an exclusion in the policy, because after all, the insured would not be made whole. Whether the insured is made whole is not the standard in this case. It wasn't the standard under Stucker or Grubbs, even. What the standard is in this case is what the contract says. And what the contract says is that the insurer is obligated to repair or replace the property with other property of like kind or quality. And the question is whether that inherently connotes value. And according to the plain meaning of the term repair, it does not.
But does it make sense then under that theory that if I'm looking at the limit of liability language, actually it's the actual cash value if it's damaged and stolen. I assume that's if it's total loss.
If it can't be repaired.
So then you get the actual cash value.
Correct.
Fair market value. If you go down to the second one, if you replace the property with other property of kind, and what you give an amount or the property to replace the property with other property of like kind and quality, you'd be getting the same like kind and quality, and presumably equal to the fair market value of that car before it was damaged. So the only time you may not get that is this other clause where it's amount necessary to repair. Now, does that make sense?
Well, I think it does according to the plain meaning, Your Honor. And if I would refer you back to the discussion of that very issue in the Texas case in Schaefer. And just let me read you the Texas Supreme Court's the way in which the court addressed the issue of like kind and quality. The court said, whether or not intrinsic value generally inheres in the word quality, and assuming without deciding that the phrase of like kind and quality modifies both repair and replace, we must look to the ordinary meaning of the words that are modified. We have said that the words repair and replace with regard to a vehicle connote something tangible, like removing dents, fixing parts, or replacing the vehicle with a comparable substitute. Thus, if an insurer elects to repair a vehicle and must replace parts in doing so, it must use parts of like kind and quality. Likewise, if an insurer elects to replace the vehicle, it must do so with a vehicle of like kind and quality. And then it says Schaefer's interpretation strains the policy's plain terms. I think you go back to the plain and ordinary meaning of the word repair in this case and discover that there's no ambiguity about that. And I think the best evidence in South Dakota of that is the definition of repair that was used by this court in the Grubbs case. Certainly there wasn't any ambiguity about the meaning of the word repair in that case. With respect to the arguments about, Justice Sinner, the cases on which the other side relies, and Mr. Abresk's comment about those cases and how they deal with a variety of policies, and there are different ways to distinguish the cases far and wide, I beg to differ that The most important thing about the many cases, and if you go read them all, you'll discover this, is that the consistent theme in the cases is what's the plain and ordinary meaning of the words repair and replace. And that is something that is entirely absent from the other side's oral argument in this case, and entirely absent from the other side's written brief in this case, is citation to authority that the word repair is inherently ambiguous. Citation to authority that under a standard dictionary definition, the word repair connotes value. Citation to authority that under any plain and ordinary meaning of the word repair, it means something other than to restore property to its physical condition and appearance. With respect to the suggestion that all of the different decisions from different jurisdictions establish that clearly the language in the policy is ambiguous, I don't think 26 out of 29 decisions reaching a common result within the last 5 years presents the situation that Mr. Abresk apparently thinks that it presents. With respect to Chief Justice Gilbertson, your question about whether Western National could have simply excluded diminished value from the policy in the first place, again, I would refer the court to the Schaefer decision where the Texas court addressed that contention and said, but an exclusion's purpose is to remove from coverage an item that would otherwise have been included. Absence of an exclusion cannot confer coverage. And I think that that's an appropriate analysis under South Dakota law. If under the plain and ordinary meaning of the words repair and replace in the policy, there is no coverage for diminished value, there is certainly no reason that Western National or any other insurer would need to exclude it, especially when the clear weight of authority in cases and jurisdictions around the country is that diminished value is not covered under that language. There is no reason to write the exclusion.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Maybe I'm missing the obvious, and I've been known to do that. But if following that argument to its logical conclusion, why did they specifically include betterment then? Isn't that in the same boat as diminution?
Well, it's the flip side of it, Your Honor. And
I think
I think the response to that is that what we're doing is enforcing the contract as it's written. And there's nothing unfair about enforcing the contract as written. It's true that the policy says if there's a betterment, that should be taken into account. In reality, that deals with situations, for example, if you had tires with 35,000 miles on them that had 2,000 miles to go and a result of damage to your car, you got new tires on it. That's something that might be considered in adjusting the loss. Or if your battery was 4 years old and you got a new battery because of damage to the front end of your car, that might be considered in adjusting the loss. That's what the policy says. It doesn't mean that we should interpret the policy because of some notion of mutuality that we have to rewrite the terms of the policy on the other side. The restatement second of contract says with respect to mutuality that as long as there's consideration, given that the court doesn't go further to address the equivalence of the exchange. And I think that opens up a can of worms if this court is going to embark on a course of judging whether all the provisions of every contract are equally fair to both parties. All we're asking for is that the contract be construed as written. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. We are adjourned.